This week's parash is Parashat Emor. We'll start from the beginning, page 672, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Vayemer Hashem El Moshe, Hashem said to Moshe, Emor Ava Kohanim B'nei Aaron, say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, V'mar Tulayim, say to them, L'nefesh Lo Yitamah Ba'amav, they shall not become impure for a dead person, a dead body, Ba'amav, amongst his nation. So the beginning of the parasha is where the Torah warns the Kohen, gives a prohibition for the Kohen to come into contact, to become impure through a dead body. And the exception to the rule are his close relatives. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein points out the following. Most of the time with the Torah, when we have Hashem telling Moshe to give us commandments, give us laws, the wording is, the word that the Torah uses to say Hashem spoke to Moshe typically is Vayedaber Hashem. And Hashem spoke, Vayedaber. Like in an English translation, Vayedaber we say is spoke, and Vayomer is said. Now, what's the difference between Dibor speaking and Amira saying? And the answer is that Dibor is a stronger tone. It means speaking in a more stronger, intense tone. And Amira means speaking in a softer tone. Typically, whenever Hashem is speaking to Moshe about the mitzvahs, it's Vayedaber. It's given over in a certain stronger tone, because it's a commandment. And when Moshe asks, how come here the Torah does not use the word Dibur, it uses the word Vayomer? He also points out that in the book of Yoshua, throughout the book of Yoshua, when Hashem is speaking to Moshe, to Yoshua, to Joshua, it said the wording for Hashem speaking is Vayomer Amira. And the one place where it does say Vayedaber to Yoshua, the Gemara Naka says, is where Hashem commanded Yoshua to set up the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge for someone who has killed someone unintentionally. And the Gemara says that the reason why there the wording is Dibur is because Hashem is telling Yoshua about a commandment of the Torah. Hashem is telling Yeshua to set up cities of refuge, which is an obligation from the Torah. And therefore, there, where Hashem is speaking to Yeshua about a matter of the Torah, therefore, the word Dibur comes, because it's referring back to a mitzvah of the Torah. So therefore, asks Rav Moshe, being that it's pretty clear, that whenever we're talking about mitzvahs, and we're talking about laws, and Hashem speaks to Moshe or to anyone about a law of the Torah, typically it's Dibur. That's the wording that's used, the stronger tone. How come here, when it comes to the Kohanim and their laws, does it say the word Vayomer Amira, the softer tone? So Moshe says that this is because that Hashem was telling to Moshe, Hashem was speaking to Moshe in this softer tone because there's a message that Moshe has to convey to the Kohanim when he conveys to them the mitzvahs. It's Hashem speaking to Moshe. It says Hashem said to Moshe, and Hashem says to Moshe, say to the Kohanim. There is a tone of, so a soft tone, so to speak, that Hashem conveys to Moshe that he is to convey to the Kohanim. And that's because living the life of a Kohen is pretty pressured. There are a lot of restrictions. You've got the restrictions of Tumah, of impurity. Those restrictions are not only relevant when someone passes away, but they have to be careful not to come into, I mean, I shouldn't say that. The restrictions of Tumah are generally not to come into contact with any type of Tumah of a dead person. Coming to any contact with any source of Tumah can make problems regarding the Kohen, eating Truma, participating in Karbanos, participating in the Beis HaMikdash, and Tuma Tahara, the possibilities of becoming Tame and Tar are quite common. So a Kohen has to be very careful. There's a lot of restrictions in his life. Rav Moshe also adds that the main purpose of the Kohen, other than serving in the Beis HaMikdash, was to be the teacher of Torah to the Jewish people. They were originally the primary teachers of Torah. So they've got a lot on their plate. They've got all the restrictions. They've got the work in the Beis HaMikdash. They've got the responsibility of teaching Torah to people, which is not always the easiest thing to do. And therefore, they're under a lot of pressure. And therefore, when it comes to the way that they might perform their responsibilities as a Kohen, It may come, they may come across a little bit on the hard side, on the sharp side, because they really have to feel a lot of pressure. And therefore Hashem spoke to Moshe in a soft tone, telling Moshe that he has to convey to the Kohanim that they have to approach their responsibilities in a softer way. That as much as their responsibilities may engender some tension and some difficult situations they have to deal with, and therefore they may come across fulfilling the responsibilities in a tense way, in a strong way, in a sharp way, Hashem tells Moshe, Hashem is telling Moshe to convey to Aaron and his children that you need to fulfill your responsibilities in a soft way. The mitzvahs are conveyed in a soft manner to convey to the Kohanim that they have to approach these mitzvahs in a softer manner, with serenity, with calm, and with patience. So therefore, the changing of the word amira, the fact that even though we're talking about laws here, Hashem doesn't use the typical expression of dibur, but rather amira, which is a softer tone, because Moshe is being told that he needs to convey the softer tone to the Kohanim in their approach to their responsibilities, which actually engenders a lot of pressure, a lot of challenges, and it could really come out that they would do it in a harsher, stricter form, and therefore they're being told, you need to do it in a softer tone, calm, serene, with patience. Now, the Rashi comments on the fact that it says that Hashem said to Moshe, Emor al Kohanim, say to the Kohanim, the sons of Aaron, Va'amar Tilayim, and say to them, what's the double saying? So Rashi tells us, this is the top Rashi, the first Rashi, Amar Amarta, the fact that Torah mentions twice, say to the Kohanim, is Vahazer Gedoyla Malaktanim. This is to teach us that the adults are responsible to make sure that the Ketanim do not make themselves impure. So you tell the Kohanim their mitzvah, and you tell them to make sure that they will warn their children, make sure their children don't come into contact with Tumah. They have an obligation to make sure, a Torah obligation, to make sure that their children do not come into contact with Tumah. So Ramesh Feinstein asks that we can understand that the reason why this is derived, the way this is derived, is because why does the Torah have to say speak Emor twice? It says speak to the Kohanim and say to them. Why is Hashem telling Moshe twice speak? So the extra speaking is coming to tell us something more. And what's that something more? Not only are they obligated to make sure that they don't come into contact with Tumah, they have to make sure their children don't. Okay. Rav Moshe points out, though, that both words, Emor and Amarta, are really going back on the Kohanim. It says, Emor la Kohanim b'nei Aaron, v'amarta lehem, and say to them. So both words of saying are going on the adults. Say to the adults. Where do we see in the wording? Where is it alluded to, at least in the wording? Where can we put in the wording that there's something here about telling the ketan, about the fact that you have to tell the ketanim what to do? Both of these are Moshe Rabbeinu was being told, speak to the Kohanim about Tumah. Say to the Kohanim and speak to them about Tumah. It's all being focused on them. Where is there anything mentioned about the children in the pasuk that we should say that the saying here, the talking here, is about talking to the children. The talking is directed at the adults.
You could say it says El HaKohanim B'nei Aharon, and the B'nei could imply all generations.
It doesn't.
No.
Not in the pasuk shot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's Ramesh's question. Now again, these are extra words. And extra words give us the license to go ahead and learn things from them. But Ramesh seems to want to be able to say that even though both expressions of Amira are being directed towards the Gedolim, and it would seem therefore that when we're talking about this prohibition of becoming impure through a dead body, again, just from reading the words would be directed to the Gedolim not to become Tamei. Where is there something there that we can say alludes to speaking to the children also? So Rav Moshe says, like this, Rav Moshe says that whenever you try to teach a child and train a child to do mitzvahs, train a child how to live life properly. If all you say to them is, do this, do that, or don't do this, don't do that, it doesn't always work. It's important that whatever you convey to them, you convey to them in a manner that this is something that's important to you, that you love to do, and that you find joy in doing. If it's all about, this is what you got to do, and that's life, that's not going to carry over well. And the famous example that's given for Rav Moshe, that Rav Moshe says, is that, I don't know if he says it in Darash Moshe, but they quote him from a different place at least, that when people would, in the early 1900s, when Jews first came to America, and they needed to find employment, and they were told, if you don't come Saturday, don't come Monday. And people would lose their jobs right and left. So a father could come home after losing his job for Shabbos, and he could come up and say to his, express to his family, let's come in, ton, what can you do? It's Shabbos. Can't work Shabbos. Okay. Which is basically conveying the idea, it's hard to be a Jew, so Shvetz is a Yid, but, you know, hey, what can you do? You got to do what you got to do. That's one way. Another way is to actually convey to the family that you have lost your job because of Shabbos, and you're proud of it, and Hashem's not going to forsake us, and you're upbeat, and you're positive, because you are happy about what you've done. You're happy for what you've sacrificed for Hashem. So when you go ahead and convey to your children the fact that although you lost your job, that you're not giving up hope, you know that Hashem is going to protect us, and this is the greatest thing that we can do, and we're proud and joyous for what we're doing, it's a whole different message conveyed to the children. And therefore, the point here of Amar V'Amarta, which both words of say are being focused towards the adults. And there's this double speaking to the adults about the prohibition of tuma to them. But the point of the double speaking to them, says Reb Moshe, is number one, first, tell them the law, and then tell them that they should keep the law with joy and with pride. And when they do that, when they then admonish their children and teach their children that they shouldn't be doing so, the children won't look at it just as, this is what we got to do, but they'll see how proud and how joyous their father was in doing it, and that will be that will really inspire them to continue in his ways. So Rav Moshe is trying to accomplish this. He's trying to say, yes, the words of the pasuk seem to convey a double speaking of the laws to the adults. And the answer is yes, there is a double speaking to the adults. But the double speaking, to the adults is the laws, and to do the and fulfill the law with joy. And when you do that, then you will be able to properly fulfill what we derive from this extra word halachically, which is that not only do you have to make sure that you, the adult Kohen, don't come into contact with a dead body and become impure, you make sure your children also won't. So what Moshe tried to do is he tried to, again, take the connotation of the pasuk, which seems to be a repetition of the laws to the adult, and say where teaching the children lies in that. Because we know the extra word is teaching us a law. The law is the fact that we have to make sure, the kind has to make sure the children also don't become tamei. But where is that? Where does that fit? Where can we see? Where can we fit that into what the pasuk seems to imply that we're just talking to the adults about themselves? The answer is because the second speaking to the adult is telling the adult how they should fulfill this, how they should fulfill it with joy and with pride. And when they do that, that is how they'll be able now to fulfill teaching their children to do so in the proper way, in the most inspirational way, that the children will feel proud to continue. Now, the fact that the Torah is telling us here that we are to make sure that the ketanim, that the minors, don't come into contact with a dead body, this is really not just exclusive to Tumah. Right, there's an obligation of chinuch, of training our children in the mitzvahs, and this is one of the sources that's given, that we have an obligation to make sure that our children fulfill mitzvahs when they come to the age of being able to do so. And Rabbi Friend brings from Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg Zatzal a question as to this idea of the adults being responsible to the minors, that they should also make sure to do mitzvahs, keep mitzvahs. This is not something, again, exclusive to Tumah. It involves all the mitzvahs of the Torah. I mean, it could be halachically, this is the Raisa, maybe the other things are the Rabbanan, but this is cited as a source for training children. And Weinberg asked, why of all places are these laws chosen to be the example of how parents have to train their children in mitzvahs? Why the laws of the Tumah of a Kohen? Of all places, why of all places in the Torah, why pick something like this, something like a bit obscure, like this, about the prohibition of Tumah? Why is this the place where the Torah chooses to try to give the message about training our children? So Rabbi Weinberg answered in the following way. Rabbi Weinberg answered that this is a very appropriate place to learn our obligation to train children, because this situation of the Tumah of Kohanim actually is a situation, a very good situation for a very big problem that parents face in training their children. And that problem is that very often when we tell our children not to do something, the first question is, but they do it, why can't we do it? Kids ever ask you that? Well, they do that, why can't we do that? And it's a big challenge. It's hard. It's hard to deal with that question sometimes. You don't want to put other people down. It's hard to explain. And sometimes maybe parents don't even bother because of that. But looking at the situation of a Kohen, where this little Kohen is told, you can't go here, and you can't go there, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. Everybody else is going there, and you can't. They can't because if they come home, first of all, you have to make sure they can't become tamei. Right? They themselves can't become tamei. It affects a lot of other things in a Kohen's house when people become tamei. And it can create some difficulties for the child when the child is restricted from going where everyone else can't. And the question is going to be, why are we different? And therefore, the Torah here chose this to be the place to speak about training our children, because the Torah is trying to tell us, although you're going to run into this difficulty of why are we different, that is the challenge that you have to deal with when being a parent. The case here, when it comes to Shabbos, you know, everybody's keeping Shabbos, you know. They're all living in Eretz Yisrael and Jewish. Everybody's keeping Shabbos. Tumah, though, comes out something that makes a big distinction with the Kohen and everybody else. This is where the parents are going to face the challenge of why are we different, and the Torah is saying, you have to face it, you have to deal with it. You're going to have to deal with this question of, why are we different? So my friend says, so what's the answer? When the little Kohen is told he can't go over there, and he wants to know why can everybody else and I can't. So what's the answer? The answer is because, as the Torah says, the Kohen is holy because he is the one who serves in the Beis HaMikdash. A father would say to his son who's a Kohen, you know why we're different? Because Hashem has given us a special task of serving in the Beis HaMikdash that gives us the privilege. We have the privilege of serving the Beis HaMikdash. We have the privilege of having a sanctity to us that no other people have. And because of that, we have to protect that sanctity, and therefore we cannot come into contact with a dead body. The way to explain to the child is not just, that's the way it is, but rather to explain to the child, this is all about the privilege that we have. It's not about being restrictive, it's not about being controlling. It's about understanding that because of the privilege that we have of being Kohanim, therefore we have to protect that privilege. We have a special Kedusha, we have a special sanctity as Kohanim. We have to protect, we have to preserve that Kedusha, that sanctity. And that's the way, when the question is, why are we different than everyone? The answer is, because Hashem has given us a special privilege to have this special sanctity that we need to keep up, we need to protect. And this is part of the Torah's lesson to all of us of when we have to tell our children whether we're Kohanim or not. And we have to tell our children, the children see other people doing things that we say not to. The other people are watching things or listening to things or doing things that we say that's inappropriate for us to do. We don't do those things. And they say, everybody else is doing and having a great time. Why can't we? And the answer is the same answer that's given to the Kohen, who's the child Kohen. We as Jews have a Yiddish neshama. We have a special neshama. We have a special kedusha, a special sanctity. We are Hashem's chosen people, and in order to preserve that special sanctity, that special relationship with Hashem, these are things that we don't do. Hashem told us that we, because of our kedusha, our sanctity, the way that we protect our sanctity and connect with our sanctity and connect with Hashem are these ways. The fact that we don't do these things is not something we're lacking, but rather the contrary. Because of the greatness that we have been given there, and these things contradict, these things profane that greatness, therefore we don't do it. This is all part. The whole idea of chinuch, of teaching children, the whole fact that it's mentioned here in this parsha is because it carries a very, very important message when it comes to training our children. This is a prime example when a child would say to his father, why are we different? And he feels restricted, and he feels that he's losing out. Here is where the Torah says, no, train the child. You have to train the child in this. You have to train him in the way that he understands it's part of a privilege. It's part of the greatness of being part of the Jewish people. Just want to conclude this discussion with a story that Rabbi Shimon Finkelman brings down about a Jew who, again, was one of those people who would not work on Shabbos. And every Monday when he came back to work, he received a pink slip. So one sukkah, he and his children got together. They put up the sukkah, they put up the schach. Then he said to his children, it's time now to decorate the sukkah. So he went back inside, and he came out with his wife with a box. And he opened up the box, and the box was full of pink papers. And he says to his children, he said, when you lose your job here in America, they give you a pink slip. That's the note of that tells you you're terminated, you lost your job. These are all the notes that I have received for losing my job because I wouldn't work on Shabbos. All these notes to me are badges, they're medals. And there's no greater decoration of the sukkah than I can think of than of this. Let's decorate the sukkah. That is how a parent convey to his children, not that it's difficult what we're going through, but that rather I'm proud of what I've gone through. I'm joyous what I've gone through, and that Hashem is going to help us. Okay. So let's now go to page 674. Here the pasuk says, "Vikidashtei, you shall sanctify him. You shall sanctify the kohen, ki eslechem Elokecha hu makriv, because he offers the bread of your God. He offers the sacrifices. Kadosh yelach, he shall be holy to you. Ki kadosh ani Hashem mekadishchem, for I, Hashem who sanctifies you, I am holy." So this is the pasuk that teaches us to sanctify a kohen. What does it mean to sanctify a kohen? It means that we have to show a Kohen honor. A Kohen gets the first aliyah. A Kohen is always the one given to first to speak. He's always given the one to be the one to make the bracha for others. We have an obligation to show respect to a Kohen. If we disrespect a Kohen, we actually have transgressed this positive commandment of sanctifying him. Chavetz Chaim says, you speak Lashon Hara about a Kohen and you embarrass him and you put him down. Not only have you spoken Lashon Hara, you have transgressed the positive commandment of sanctifying the Kohen, of giving a Kohen honor. So, in Shulchan Aruch, in the laws of Nesiyas Kavayim, the laws of Berachas Kohanim, at the end of that chapter, which is Simen Kav Chav Ches, chapter 128, the Ramah brings down, Asr lihishtamish b'kayin afilu b'zman azeh. Even nowadays, where the Kohen does no service in the Beis HaMikdash, it is forbidden to use him. It's forbidden to have a Kohen do your personal service for you. David Kamayo Behektish. It's like misusing a sanctified object. A Kohen has innate sanctity, no matter who he is. And therefore, you can't just use him. You can't just like tell him, you know, fetch this and do this and do that. You're not allowed to make a Kohen do things for you. Unless the Kohen forgives. If the Kohen forgoes his honor, then you can tell him to do anything you want. If he's ready to forgo his honor as a Kohen, then you can tell him to do anything. So the Mishnah Berurah brings down that the reason of this opinion is that all the aspects of honor, of respect to a Kohen that we have, these are all for the benefit of the Kohen. If the Kohen says, I don't want it, I don't need it, it's okay, I forgo it, then he forgoes it, and you'll be allowed to, and you'll be allowed to make him do things for you. The Yesh Mishaiver, but then you have those who say to the Mishnah Berurah, Shenayach Halitin Rishus L'shtamish Bay. He cannot give you permission to use him for your personal service. Unless he has some personal benefit from it, like he gets paid. Or let's say he considers it a privilege to serve this honorable person, so that's like, again, his gain, because he gains pleasure from it. Then, if the Kohen says, I forgo I forgo the honors of Kahuna, he can do these things. He can serve someone else. However, if the Kohen has no personal benefit from it, he can't forgo it. He can't forgo and say, I'll do this for you, and you let him do it. The Afagav, the Kavod Yochal Limcho, because even though he really can forgo honor, Shimush Inyushal Bezoyinu, but actually to have him serve you is a certain degree of degrading. It's not just a question of, are you honoring me or treating me regular? You're kind of treating me in a little bit, in a lower state, in a lower status. That's called Bezoyin. There's a certain degree of degrading, of lowering. And that the Kohen can't forego. The Kohen can say, you want to honor me? I don't need the honor. But you want to degrade me and therefore degrade the Kahuna? And degrade doesn't mean you're embarrassing him and you're abusing him. But the mere fact that he's serving you, that's a certain way. That means he's lowering himself to you in a certain way. And that's considered lowering the Kahuna. In that situation, he can't forego. Which means in that situation, you cannot use him or allow him to serve you. The Torah Lachma says the Mishnah Berurah, Lachatchila, it's a good thing to be stringent on. Torah, it's a good thing to be stringent on. Which means, according to the letter of the law, if he forgoes, you can have him do anything. It's a good thing, but he says it's a proper thing to be strict about. And then he says, L'shtamish b'em, shayvitz b'zuyis b'vadi yesh lizayr. You for sure should be careful not to ask a coin to do something that's shayvitz b'zuyis, a degrading kind of thing, you know? Which I guess are like, you know, get down on the floor and wash the floor, you know? That is something, that's considered in people's eyes a more of a degrading act. You can't, a degrading act, you can't degrade him. If you're talking about he's coming, bringing, you know, helping you out and doing work for you, and, you know, you're his boss, and he's helping you do work in the sense he's serving you in that sense. All right, that he says, Tayva Achmer, good to be stringent on, even though it seems that according to the law of the law, it could be done. But if it's sheiris bazilius, it's considered a degrading type of service to someone, that you should be careful about. Okay, so here we have this law about a Kohen. We have an obligation to honor him. If he forgoes his honors he can forgo. If it's a question, though, of forgoing his honor to the degree of now he's going to serve you, that we have an argument about, whether that he can forgo or not, because maybe that already falls under the category of lowering the honor of the dignity of the kahuna, and for sure, if it's something that is degrading and debasing, that's something that you should be very careful about, even if he says, Amaychal, I forgo. So I'm going to share with you a beautiful story, again from Rishon Finkelman. It talks about a Mr. Magulis, a man who had spent basically the entire war in Buchenwald. He was there from the beginning of the war to the end, and he somehow or another survived. And he survived because when he first came to Buchenwald, the Nazis assigned him to work in a quarry and to cut stone. And every day he met his quota. He was apparently a very useful person for them, and therefore he was left alone. So a transport from Hungary came, and Mr. Magulis noticed a young Hasidic boy arriving in the camp. He was very thin and frail. And he realized that they will dispose of him right away because he's useless. And therefore he decided to go to the commandant and ask to be given an assistant to even produce, to be able to do his work even better. And he saw a young boy that he'd like to have work with him. And the commandant agreed. Okay? So the young boy came and worked with him. They worked together. The young boy helped Mr. Margulis. Not only did he help him with the physically with the work, but they had nice conversations. It was a very good help to Mr. Margulis. In the middle of the conversation, the young boy tells Mr. Margulis he's a Kayin. Mr. Margulis says, "You're a Kayin? Then I can't have you serving me like this. You're a Kayin. I can't do that. I can't have you serving me the way you do, working for me the way you do. That would be considered using a Kohen. I can't do that." But the young boy said, "So what are you telling me? You're not going to give me work anymore? This is the only way I'm staying alive." He said, "Don't worry about it." He says, "Generally, you know, what's going to happen here is that you don't work. You'll stay here with me. You won't work. And if ever a soldier comes to check on us, that's when you'll grab something and look like you're working." And this is how they did things to the end of the war. And at the end of the war, they were liberated. They went their separate paths, and they hadn't seen each other for years. One time, Mr. Margulis gets a phone call from a Chassidus Sharav. He was living in Washington Heights, and a Chassidus Sharav from Williamsburg calls him up, wants to come meet him after Shabbos. After Shabbos, a regal-looking Chassidus Sharav comes to the door. He says, "Mr. Margulis, I'm so-and-so. I'm the boy who you used to work with. I'm the young boy that you saved. And I came here to share with you my gratitude for saving my life and to present to you a sefer that I just wrote." And that's how the family found out how Mr. Margulis had saved this young boy. But look how far he went, this man. Look how far he went in giving honor to a Kohen. He followed this halacha to the highest degree. He wasn't going to use it. And there's no question the boy was Michael, and there's no question that the boy had no problem with this whatsoever. Still, Mr. Margulis said, "You're a Kohen, I'm not going to use you. I can't. You have to respect the Kohen." That's how far this man went with that. Okay. Let's now page 680, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. This is Perek Chaf Beis, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Ushmarta mitzvaysai, you shall guard my commandments. Vasisim oisim, you shall do them. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. So what are these two things? What does guarding my mitzvahs mean? What does doing my mitzvahs mean? Rashi says, Ushmartem zu ha-mishnah. Shmartem, guard my mitzvahs, means learn them. Vasisim means perform them. That's how Rashi learns. The Chassam Sefer has a very interesting explanation to what it means, Ushmarta mitzvaysai, you shall guard my mitzvahs. So I'm going to ask you to turn back to Bereishis, Parshas Vayeshev. Take a look on page 200. The bottom line, Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayekanu vayechav, this is talking about after Yosef told his brothers both dreams, after the second dream, which was actually told to their father. The father says, "What kind of dream is this? It's not possible for me and your mother to come." And the father was really trying to convey as if the dream means nothing. Vayekanu vayechav, his brothers were jealous of him. The aviv shamar es hadavar, and the father guarded the matter. Yaakov guarded this matter. What does it mean he guarded the matter? Rashi says, he was waiting to see when it would come. Meaning, guarding the matter in this manner means that he kept in mind and waited to see the fulfillment of it. Rarely Yaakov knew the dream meant something, and he guarded the matter. He kept it in mind. He was waiting to see its fulfillment. Says the Chassam Sefer, that the Torah, Ushmarta mitzvaysai, when it says, and keep my mitzvahs, guard my mitzvahs, it means also the same thing that it means by Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu guarded the matter means he kept it in mind and he awaited to see it happen. Here also, guard my mitzvahs. Keep my mitzvahs in mind and wait for the chance to do them. That's Shemira. Just heard by Yaakov the word Shamar, guarding, means waiting for it to come about. Here too, wait for the mitzvah, anticipate the mitzvah, hope to have the chance to do the mitzvah. And that's what we find by Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara in Bracha says, Rabbi Akiva was being tortured to death, and he was saying Shema, and with joy, and his student said to him, Ad Kan, this, it goes this far, and he said, I have been waiting all my life for the chance to do this mitzvah. There's an idea that if a person to guard the mitzvahs means to anticipate and to hope and to wait for a chance to do them. So my father-in-law sent me a story from Rabbi Krohn. It's an unbelievable story. The story gets, it's a beautiful illustration of this. The story goes that it doesn't have here what year it took place, but it happened in Amsterdam. And in Amsterdam they were consecrating a new cemetery. They started a new cemetery. They purchased a piece of land. They had some kind of a ceremony about, you know, setting this aside as a new cemetery. But it was completely unused. It was brand new. It was just a piece of land. Well, the first Jew died. After this, it was going to be buried in the cemetery. So they had the funeral service. They brought the body to be buried, which it seems what they would do is that when they would bring the body to be buried, right then and there, they would dig the grave. And they came to the cemetery, and the grave was already dug. They found, the Chevra Kedisha came, whoever was in charge came, they brought him along, and they brought him to be buried, to dig the grave. The grave is dug. Who dug the grave? They checked into the matter. And they found out, you know who dug the grave? A Kohen dug the grave. A Kohen heard about the new cemetery. There was nobody buried there yet, so he was still allowed to go there. And he never had a chance to be involved in the mitzvah of Kavod HaMeis. He never had the chance to be involved in showing honor to the dead. So this was his chance. This was his one chance to be able to do this mitzvah of giving the final respect to a dead person. So he went before anybody had a chance to come with the mace there and wouldn't be able to be there, and he dug the grave. That's an example of Ushmartim. That's an example of hoping to do a mitzvah. Here is a man, he heard a chance to do a mitzvah, clearly he wanted to do it so badly, and he made sure to go ahead and do it. Beautiful story. Unbelievable. Okay. Now, let's continue reading here. Pasuk Lamed Beis. V'loy sechalelu l'shem kachi, you shall not desecrate my holy name. V'nikdashti b'seich b'nei Yisrael, and I shall be sanctified among the Jewish people. Okay. Ani Hashem Akadishchem, I am Hashem who sanctifies you. Now, this pasuk is the pasuk that teaches us the obligation of, if necessary, to give up our lives to sanctify Hashem's name. If we are put in a situation to, let's say, be told, kill someone, I'm going to kill you. What's the halacha? You've got to give up your life. If you don't give up your life, and you don't kill the and you don't kill the person, right? They told you, kill the person, I'm going to kill you. You don't kill the person, and then for some reason decide not to kill you. Okay? No, I'm sorry. They say, kill the person or I'll kill you, and you kill the person. Oh. Sorry about that. And you kill the person. Okay? So, that's v'lo sechalu. That's don't desecrate. It's don't desecrate my name. They tell you to worship idols. Right? Tell you to do idol worship, or else we're going to kill you. And you worship idols. That's the prohibition. Don't desecrate my name. V'nikdashti, and my name will be sanctified, is really the positive commandment that says, give up your life. There's a prohibition not to desecrate God, and then there's a positive to sanctify Hashem's name. What's interesting is that the wording of the nikdashti, it doesn't say, and sanctify. It doesn't use it in a verb form, to do something, to be active. It's not an active form, it's a passive form. The nikdashti, I will be sanctified. Something will happen that will cause sanctification. It doesn't say sanctify, actively sanctify, which would mean, if you're being told, give up your life, you'd be told, sanctify Hashem's name. That would mean give up your life. But it doesn't say it in that form. It says, and my name shall be sanctified. Sounds like indirect. Says Reb Nissen Alpert, that's all, that the Torah is trying to convey the message that there really are two types of Kiddush Hashem. Because when we talked about sanctifying Hashem's name, sanctifying Hashem's name has many different levels. The highest form is to give up your life when necessary. But there are other levels of sanctifying Hashem's name. When you live a life where people see the way you live and they admire you and they realize that the lifestyle that you live is so admirable because you are a Jew and you live a life of Torah, you're sanctifying Hashem's name. And in that situation, you're not, your intention is not to sanctify Hashem's name necessarily. There's no active sanctifying Hashem's name. You're living your life the way it's supposed to be. You're doing what you're supposed to be. You're living your life as is. Well, of course, the way it's supposed to be. But living your life the way it's supposed to be is a cause of sanctifying Hashem's name. So the Torah chose to talk about sanctifying Hashem's name with the wording, and I will be sanctified, which has a connotation of not necessarily actively sanctifying Hashem, but that it can come about indirectly, is trying to allude to the idea that when we live our lives the proper way, that through that Hashem's name is sanctified. So we didn't actively go out to sanctify Hashem's name. There was no intent of sanctifying Hashem's name directly, but we're doing what we're supposed to do, live the lives that we're supposed to live, and through that, that brings honor to Torah. That is also the fulfillment of the mitzvah sanctifying Hashem's name. Therefore, the Torah chose the indirect matter, the indirect phrasing, I will be sanctified, to bring out this point. Yes, of course, there is the active sanctifying Hashem's name, giving up your life to sanctify Hashem's name. But there's also a way of sanctifying Hashem's name and doing this mitzvah, not that you're giving up your life, you're doing something actively to sanctify Hashem's name, but you're living the exemplary life of Torah you're supposed to, and because of that, that causes the sanctification of Hashem's name, and you'll fulfill this great mitzvah.
Thank you.